The doors are now open for the last of three new buildings at the Defense Language Institute Foreign Language Center. It's just one of the recent changes at the world-class language training institute in Monterey, California. It also has a new commandant as of this past May. That commandant is Colonel David Chapman, and we invited him to talk about what's new at DLI and at the Presidio of Monterey. Colonel, thanks for doing this. Hello from Washington.
Hi, Jared. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you bet. So let's start with those facility upgrades, if we can. Take us through a little bit exactly what those military construction projects will do for you in terms of meet and mission out there.
Sure. What we've done, the most recent of the three building upgrades is called Cook Call, recently dedicated to Marine Corps Captain Cook. And it provides the Defense Language Institute with a modern, state-of-the-art education facility that could honestly compete with anything in the world. It gives us significant more classroom space and allows us to move a number of our languages from some of our almost World War II era barracks, if you will, and training spaces into a real modern classroom. So it's going to give our students an opportunity to excel that they probably didn't have before.
Maybe a silly question, but what constitutes a world-class state-of-the-art facility when it comes specifically to language training?
Sure. What we use for the students are smart boards that allow the instructors to go out and get real-world authentic materials to bring language to the classroom. The students also have access to a .edu network that's piped wirelessly throughout the building. They're issued MacBook and iPads to use for their studies, and they link all of that into the classroom in a wireless network. So the teachers can teach them wirelessly with real-world materials, and then they can receive everything right there in the classroom.
Very cool. So one thing that I'd be interested in hearing about is how you sort of manage the supply and demand of the sorts of languages that you need to teach service members and civilians across the government. For example, logic would seem to dictate that as the Afghan conflict winds down, you need fewer speakers of Urdu and Pashto. I would guess that also changes as the Army, stands up things like regional airline forces and the Asia-Pacific rebalance. How does that all get managed?
Sure. Without getting to the bureaucratic process of it, basically the slots are asked for by the services about 2 years out. They kind of look across the horizon and say, look, we need X number of speakers of this language. We have this many in the force. Therefore, we would like this many slots to be taught in the next 2 years. So we're looking at 2017 now, allocating seats for that. Now, the challenge is if we're not flexible enough to surge for, say, an impending crisis somewhere where we need additional instructors and teachers, we can't meet that demand. So we need to be as flexible as possible while still maintaining what the services ask for in a long continuum of curriculum.
We wouldn't mind a little bit of bureaucratic talk. I mean, to talk us through a little bit, if you can, how you maintain that surge capacity. I mean, as you kind of allude to, there's going to be contingencies that pop up all over the world that we're going to need people for, right?
There are, and I guess I should kind of caveat this by saying providing language instruction at the base level is kind of like turning a battleship or an aircraft carrier. It takes time.
Mm.
Our I would say easiest language to learn, at least easiest for native English speakers, they're 6 months long. So if you come in with the very easiest language, which is going to be in the kind of the romance category, Italian, Spanish, French, those types of things, it'll be 180 days before you're flash to bang, before you can even get the first student out. If you want to go into the higher category languages, such as Chinese and some of the Arabic and Arabic dialects, it's going to take up to 15 to 18 months just to turn one student through there. So we have to start immediately as soon as we see a need and then get the students into the course and then get them out just as quickly as possible. So it doesn't happen quickly, but we've got about 30,000 linguists all throughout the Department of Defense that are already trained in a number of different languages. And then it's up to the services and the commands to try and allocate those positions towards the need. So we're continuing to fill the pipeline, but we do need to be a little bit flexible to meet the nation's needs.
And once a student has been through one of those courses of instruction, soup to nuts, what kind of level of proficiency do we expect him or her to have?
Well, we have an interagency learning roundtable, which will pretty much call, if you come in knowing nothing, you just walk in right off the street, can't speak a single word of Pashto, you're at a zero. And then it goes up to five for a pretty much an educated native speaker. we would like our students to be somewhere in the middle. And in layman's terms, that's kind of like probably conversational to conversational plus an educated level. So the base course student, when he or she walks out of here, should be able to hold a pretty healthy conversation with a native, making few grammatical mistakes and understanding a wide range of different topics. They then go on from the basic course to additional training, and then once they get to their unit, they continue to refine their craft. So we get them started, and then they finish off. It's a lifelong journey, as most of us know with language, and they finish off a bit later.
Correct me if I'm wrong on this, but in Iraq and Afghanistan, since you served in both places, my strong impression is that, at least in the early days, we relied very heavily on essentially contracted local native speakers as opposed to having our own folks trained up. Talk me through some of the reasons why that's, if it is suboptimal, why it's suboptimal. I mean, why do we need to have trained service members fluent in these foreign languages rather than relying on local translators?
Well, the most glaring need there is certainly for the security clearance piece. A lot of our students graduate from here and go on to do sensitive missions, and you simply have to have service members that can obtain a secret or top secret clearance to do the missions they need to do. Now, on the battlefield, a commander would always, I would say, want to have his or her own service member working directly for them as an interpreter translator. So for those two reasons, command relationships and then just the pure need for security clearance is kind of what keeps us in business.
Just reading through your bio, I noticed that you're also a former student there at DLI. As I recall, Russian was the language course of instruction that you went through. You want to talk a little bit about how you feel like that's had an impact on the course of your career and enhanced your progression through the ranks as you've gone on?
Sure. In the mid-90s, I moved 97, 98, I came in for my Russian basic course. I'm a foreign area officer for the U.S. Army. I'd been through a lot of the typical hard Army schools, Ranger school, Airborne school, Master Parachutist, all that kind of stuff. And I can tell you that the almost 1 year I spent learning Russian was the most difficult thing I have done in the entire Army. I've since gone on to study both Serbo-Croatian through DLI and Greek. I tell you, it doesn't get any easier with age. But that 1 year that I spent here absolutely shaped the way I view problem solving. It shaped the way I approach intellectual and academic issues. And I hear it continually from graduates every day. They call back and say, boy, DLI changed my life. Whether they're still in the service or they're retired or they're businessmen or in national service in some other capacity. People continually talk about that 1 year or 6 months or 15 months that they studied here and how it changed them. It's a flogging. I'll tell you that is very, very difficult. We're in class roughly 6-7 hours a day. We have 2 to 3 hours of homework. You study in the evenings, you study on the weekends, you study on the holidays. But that's just the intensity and the pace that it is. So it's a shaping environment.
As we finish up here, just wanted to ask you what your priorities are for DLI as you take the leadership role there. We've already talked about the facility enhancements that have just come online, but what else do you want to accomplish as you lead this organization?
I've kind of given the staff a pretty concrete direction. I've got five main priorities. The first and foremost is prevention of sexual assault and sexual harassment within the ranks. There's no place for it. Certainly no place in an academic environment for someone to feel stressed that they can't study and get the most out of their academic pursuits. So that's the first. The second concerns academic production. And what we mean by that is for every 100 service members that I get coming out of either a transfer or coming right out of basic training, right now we're graduating about 70. So that means 30 somehow for some reason are not making it through our program. Some of them, it's just too difficult for them, but there's some that we can get to. So my second priority is, look, let's get that production rate higher so I can give more back to the services when they send them in to us. Third priority is common with a lot of us. I want to be a good steward of government resources, and I'm asking the staff to find efficiencies where they can. The fourth is to reward innovation and creativity in the classroom. We're the best at what we do, but I think we can get better. And lastly, I've got a kind of a strategic communications program, which is part of the reason we're talking today, to try and elevate the prestige and the general knowledge of what the Defense Language Institute does for national security. I want young men and women who leave their high school homerooms to go to the recruiter and say, hey, I want to get into DLI. How do I get into that place? I heard about that. That's tough and that's cool and I want to do it. And that would be a win-win for both me and for the nation.
Well, and that leads me to one final wrap-up question, actually. So if you're somebody who's already a member of the Federal Civil Service or serving in uniform, are there avenues for you, if you want to go to DLI and learn a language, or are those decisions basically made for you by your command or your agency?
Well, for the most part, the seats in this school are not open to just anyone. You're either in a language-producing or a language-coded billet that will allow you to come here, or you are transferring into one as such. So we train a lot of military intelligence soldiers. We train foreign area officers. We train Olmsted scholars. We train some interpreters and translators. But for the most part, it's fixed if you're in the uniformed services to get a seat here. At this time, we're not providing education to any of the other federal workforce.